and welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I'm Chris Austin.
And I'm Luke Parker.
And rejoining us today is a special guest, for we are continuing our conversation with Ralph D. Oppo. Ralph, welcome back, sir.
How's it going? I think this is the third time I've been with
sure
you guys.
It is.
And talked zero times about the movie that it's so funny. It's so funny to
That's
me.
That's right. Yes. So the last time we never talked, so many tangents, and I would not be surprised if there were many more to
I'll
follow
try
in
that.
This.
I mean, to be honest, like, do we really want to talk about A View to a Kill that much? It's one of my least favorites.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I mean, and then following that is one of your favorites, isn't it? So
it's like my number three, yeah.
So we will happily have you back for that if you were open to it. But before we get on to The Living Daylights, that's right, you're back again because we never talked about your work on Getting Lost, which is the feature film documentary on the iconic TV series Lost that had its UK premiere at Phoenix Cinema back in November. We spoke about everything else but that, but we had the director, Taylor Morden, on the podcast before the premiere, but now it's time to hear your end of things. So let's talk Lost, shall we? My favorite subject. So talk to me about Lost. What was your journey with that show? Did you watch it from the beginning?
Were we really talking about Lost?
It's happening.
Wait, is today today's we're talking about Lost? I thought it was A View to a Kill.
Oh, are you serious?
Really?
No, that's fine, dude. I know all kinds of stuff about both, but no, I honestly.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to throw you.
No.
No, this is. You know what? This is going to be way easier to get Luke out on his on his heart out,
right?
Because I literally just got off an hour long Zoom with Taylor and Emily talking about we spent like the last 5 minutes talking about the doc. We spent the rest of the time talking about other stuff.
Oh, good for us then.
That's so funny. I was like, oh man, this could be great. Talk about A View to a Kill, a movie that you guys haven't talked about that one though, right?
Not yet.
It's coming soon.
Yeah.
Okay. I swear to God, I have. That's so funny because, like, I could talk about Bond until I'm blue in the face. What do you want to know about Lost?
Well, I guess last time we spoke, we did talk a bit about Lost, but I think it'd be good to go over again and maybe start with, like, quite a pedestrian question. But what is or what was like your relationship with Lost, especially when it came out? And I know some of your earlier podcast projects were to do with Lost as well.
Because that was season two, right? You started your podcast for it, The Darmalars?
Yeah. Mm. The end of season two. And it was an accident. I listened to a different podcast and they, one of the guys on that podcast left to go into the Navy. And so there was like, talks of the host that was left behind to kind of get another co-host to like keep going. And so like 4 weeks had passed and there was no word on if the show was going to come back. So me and my friend stepped in, did one episode covering those four episodes, put it on his feed to get him back, which he did. He came back and said, okay, I'm back with this new co-host, but also Ralph and Ben are going to do their show, which was the first I heard that we were going to be continuing to podcast, but we did. And we ended up doing a few more seasons. We didn't make it all the way through. Mm-hmm. Much like Luke, we didn't finish up the series, but
you got further than season three though.
We were around a while and then we did come back for the last season and stuff. There's some big gaps, but it was like back then, like podcasts weren't really a thing. So our podcast got up to like number four on iTunes and stuff. Like we're like a couple of dudes in an apartment. Flat. So like podcasting back then was a real different thing. It was just people like us, like just jumping on and chatting. It wasn't your, you know, it was before like Chris Hardwick's and Kevin Smith's decided to come in, and then it became something that could be monetized. So like we were just doing it for fun, and what was great is Lost was such a was like begging to be discussed and to be sorted out. It's almost like it's a show that reminds me of like an escape room. Like you need everyone to like kind of get together and band together and figure this out together.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Lost came at a time when there was TiVo. Like TiVo started becoming a thing. So people were like pausing to find clues. It's also like message boards were starting to become really big. And so like now people are all watching this show around the world, pausing, looking for clues and creating these communities. And then, you know, I think 2000, like season three or something, you get things like Facebook, Twitter started showing up, and like the community just started finding each other. And there's a big Lost community in podcasts. There's like at least 100 Lost podcasters out there doing their thing. And so it was like this big, huge community, which it was kind of the first time this had happened, I feel like, on a TV show. Because TV shows usually weren't serialized. You had like X-Files, and X-Files had a big following, but it was pretty episodic television with overarching storyline that you can follow all season long. Same with like Buffy. And there were like message boards for like Buffy and stuff. And I want to say one of the people who was Drew Goddard, one of the guys working on Buffy, came over to Lost and was talking about like the Buffy message boards, and Lost should do something like that. So like Bad Robot created the Fuselage, which was like an official Lost message board. And so this was really when the internet was starting to take form, and Lost was a show where it just like brought everybody worldwide together. And it was the perfect show to do that too, because it was a mystery.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So like, because of that, we ended up getting about 27,000 downloads a week for my show, The Darmalars, which for me was like, that's bigger than where the Anaheim Ducks play their hockey games. Like they get like 17,000 people in their arena or whatever. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So I'm like, that's kind of cool that we would be able to fill an arena to, for people to just listen to me and my friend bullshit about Lost.
That's crazy.
And then, you know, the show came, it left, it went away. I became friends with, you know, all kinds of people during that era on Facebook because of that Lost community. And, you know, I don't, you know, as time goes on, you start like drifting away from those people. You don't really know them as much, until about, like 12 years after Lost ended, I was reached out to by Taylor Morden, who was a director, did the Lost Blockbuster and Pick It Up, Ska in the 90s. He has a movie coming out called Vampire, which is a Bambi horror movie, you know, that he's working on. And he reached out to me and asked if I wanted to help produce this documentary about Lost, because he was one of those 27,000 people that listened to my podcast.
Amazing.
And
from what I recall, knew I was located in, he told us you said no.
Yeah, I said no. I said no. I mean, it was, then there was no real good reason. There was no good reason why I said no. like, of course I should jump at the opportunity, but for me, I'm like, I didn't want to like mess up his movie. And he, I said, well, just give me a second. Let me talk to my wife. She's like, yeah, you should do it. I'm like, yeah, okay. But it was one of those things where he finally just told me, he's like, hey, listen, this will be like my seventh documentary. He's like, you're not going to mess it up. The only thing you could do is make it better. So that's nice. I said, you know what? Let's do it. he knew I had a couple friends that I'm friends with who were tied to the production, which was a great jumping off point. If you're sure. When you're an indie doc and you're going into something, it's kind of who you know, because once you can get like a very specific name or a very specific person, one of those top of the call sheet type people,
mm-hmm.
you know that they can ask the other people and you can kind of snowball, and that's exactly what happened.
So was Jorge Garcia that person? Yeah.
Jorge is my friend. We've been friends since season 3 of Lost. He was a fan of the Darmalars. He'd listened to our podcast on his way to set to Lost. He would listen to a bunch of podcasts to see what the fans are talking about. And he would go to set and tell everybody like, hey, this is what they think is going on. And crazy. So it was his drive time listening was Lost Podcast. And he became a fan of ours, found out that we were in Southern California. So when they were wrapping season 3, he had already wrapped season 3, was back in California. And then we were like a couple episodes behind in the airing. They hadn't aired the rest. Like, we're one of the last seasons. And he sent me a message on MySpace and he said, hey, have you done this week's show yet? I'm like, yeah, we have, but we can do another one. He's like, I'm in town. Do you mind if I stop by? I'll be heading down Saturday. I'll be in your neck of the woods. I'm like, absolutely. And so like, I met Jorge that day. It was just after the episode Greatest Hits, which was leading into that season 3 finale.
A real tearjerker.
Like a nuts. It's a crazy episode. It might be it's my favorite episode of Lost.
Really?
So much stuff happens in it and it completely changes the entire series. So Luke, you're this close to like
Dude.
A huge game changer. A huge game changer.
It's been so long since I watched it now. I've got to go back right
You need to go back. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So we did. Yeah, we went in and did a finale's prediction for the season 3 finale. And Jorge was sitting there as we were doing it. And we went out to have dinner and we've just been friends since. So so when you have like Jorge Garcia, who is like, you know him from Lost. That's probably a good place to start if Taylor was like, I need to get the ball rolling on this. And then of course, Michael Giacchino, who's also a friend of mine, like did the music for every single minute of that show.
How did that
I don't
happen?
Think was had it, any additional.
Was it also Darmalars?
Through Jorge.
Jorge. I see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jorge's a big, board game fan and, I went to his house, I think it was like 2013, for 4th of July. And, I have a game called Fireball Island, which is just right there. It's a giant board. And I kept telling him about it. I'm like, dude, is this game from 1986? I had it when I was a kid. I loved it. It's about an island with fireball marbles. It's a 3D board game. And there's a tiki that sits like a volcano that sits at the top. And you move your explorers around the island, try to get to a jewel and get escape on this dock. Mm. Right. And meanwhile, like everybody's lost. Chasing each other. And there's fireballs going down the little pathways and knock people down and stuff. So it's like Mousetrap meets Lost. Mm. So I was at his 4th of July and I brought up my game because I'm like, I keep telling him he needs to see this thing to fully appreciate it. So I brought it up there and, I told him, I said, I brought the board. Do you want to see it? He's like, yeah, bust it out. Like it's a big barbecue. All kinds of people are there and stuff. So I bring out the board game and I set it up. And as I'm sitting there setting it up on the floor at the coffee table, I see Michael Giacchino come into the house. And here's the thing. I've been a fan of his since Medal of Honor. What was that, like 99? So right. I was already a fan of his for like at least like 13 years. And then, of course, Lost and Incredibles and Ratatouille is like my favorite Pixar movie. And like everything he's done like up until that point, it's just like
you had no idea music. He was coming.
No, I had no idea. I knew they were friends, but I had no idea he was coming. So he walks into the room, into the house. Immediately tracks the board, comes up to me and says, what is this? And I'm like, you're Michael. Like, I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, just play it cool. Just explain to this guy this board game, because the front of the box is just absolutely nuts. I mean, I could probably grab it. It is a very, very big box. But I mean, look at this thing.
Damn.
That looks so retro.
So he sees this box, right? And he just like zooms in on it.
Look at that.
It is just massive. So anyway, I have this conversation with Michael about it and tell him, like, you do this, you can roll fireballs down the hills. And the whole time I'm talking to him, he's on his phone, and I'm like, I don't care if he's being rude to me. I'm going to keep talking to him because he's one of my favorite composers of all time. I've been listening to film scores since I was 4, and like, I've never met like an actual film composer. Well, I met him he signed a thing for me like years ago, but it was one of those things where I'm like, I'm just sitting here talking. I'm going to keep talking to him about this because I'm talking to, at the time, an Academy Award winner, and he's got an Emmy and a Glow. He's got like everything except for the Tony. But it was one of those things where I was just like, well, if he gets, I'm sure if they do a stage, like a Broadway of Coco, he would get a Tony. I'm sure. but it's one of those things where by the time I finished talking about the board game, he had his phone up and he says, I just bought it.
Oh,
he was on eBay looking for a copy. I mean, just for the artwork alone, like that's right up his alley, like the whole tiki scene and stuff. So, as we're playing, I had a couple of little tiny Star Wars action fleet guys to fill in because I was missing a couple pieces from the board. And if you want a piece this big, it's like $40. And I'm like, I want that piece, but like $40 for a piece of plastic, like the size of a, you know, a penny. I'm like, so I just always use different like pieces from other stuff. And then I get a text message from Jorge like 2 days later. He says, Michael wants your address. And I'm like, okay. And in the mail, I got a ring box, a little like collapsing like ring box, like if you were to propose. And my wife said, oh, did Michael propose to you? I'm like, no. I opened it up and it had,
I hope so.
It had all three of the missing pieces for my board.
Wow.
And classy. I was like, man, I'm like, how neat is that? Mm. And then, maybe hung out with him a little bit every once in a while, if like I was hanging out with Jorge or something. But, as soon as lockdown hit, and we're all stuck at home, I got a text from Jorge. Hey, is it cool if I give you give Michael your number? And I'm like,
yeah.
It's fine. Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Yeah, no problem. And he sent me a text. He's like, hey, listen, during lockdown, I was thinking of playing Fireball Island on Zoom. Do you want to be part of the group? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And so, starting around the time lockdown started, every Sunday since then to this day, we play Fireball Island over Zoom.
What?
And so, yeah. Yeah. So for the last, 4 years or so, we're coming up on our fourth anniversary or fifth, maybe. What is this? 2025? Yeah.
That's amazing.
And so that's one of those things where when Taylor heard about that, I think I had mentioned it to Taylor. I'm like, yeah, I know Jorge and Michael. It was one of those things. It's like, can you produce my movie? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Like
100%.
It's a good starting. It's a good jumping off point. And it absolutely was.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Wow. Wow. That's incredible. And so.
Yeah, it's so funny.
And so I can only imagine from there, it only snowballed, right? But what is so interesting from what Taylor was saying is how you didn't, you may have had Garcia and Giacchino, but you didn't know who else you were going to get. And for each get, did it beget the next get, if that makes any sense? You know what I mean?
A little bit. A little bit. We usually don't say exactly who got us who, but, you know, people were definitely instrumental. It was really funny because at the beginning we're like, we just need to get enough people in here to get a really good sizzle reel, which right. we did. But unfortunately, like Michael and Jorge weren't able to be there for our first shoot. So our sizzle reel was fairly light on cast, but for the most part, it was supposed to be a movie about the fandom and the fans and like those podcasters and all of that stuff. But once it started snowballing and we got so many people from the show, like, we're not going to say no to Josh Holloway. We're not going to say no to, you know, Maggie Grace and Evangeline Lilly and Terry O'Quinn and Michael Emerson and Daniel Day Kim and Henry and Cusick and all. We're not going to say no to those guys. So it became less about the fans and more about the show. Well, not really. It became a balance of both.
Mm-hmm.
It became about like Lost and its sort of influence on pop culture and like just the massive nature of the show from the perspective of the cast and crew, but then also with the fans and what was going on at that time. So all the stuff with TiVo that I talked about and message boards and things. So you get that storyline as you get like, here's some major moments from the show, some like the pilot episode, Walkabout, Through the Looking Glass, Stranger in a Strange Land, like the finale, like all those really the constant, like we're like, what are the big episodes of Lost on the timeline? And then here's also what was going on with the fans at that same time.
Well, I think you absolutely.
So the snowball effect was huge though. Like we somehow had a friend who knew Fred Lane, who played the marshal in the pilot episode.
Right.
And we met him. He was in town for like a day. We shot his interview, which kind of got cut from the movie. Not that it wasn't great. He did a great interview, but he also was friends with MC Gainey, who is put us in touch with him, who was an absolute joy and a highlight of the movie.
Dude, it seemed to me that there must be B-roll footage of MC Gainey that must be gold. He seemed like a riot.
We have about an hour and a half of MC Gainey. Wow. Like, I'm hoping there's a way we can release the whole thing. We'd have to bleep out some, you know, things. But, like, all of these interviews are, like, an hour and a half long. And our movie's 2 hours. And we did 80 interviews. So there's a lot out there.
Wow.
There's really a lot out there.
Do you feel like... Yeah, I mean, do you have that urge to be like, there's so much more material to show here, you know, Getting Lost Part 2 or something like that, you know?
I mean, we could probably make a full other documentary. The first rough cut we had was about 4.5 hours long.
Oh, wow.
And the final movie came in at 2 hours, and our credits are pretty. Taylor made them go pretty quick so that we could hit the 2 hour. The movie is officially 2 hours and 3 seconds long. There's a lot out there. I'm hoping at some point we can start doing like either like smaller vignettes or interview portions to put out there on our YouTube channel or anything like that. But there's a ton of stuff out there.
That's so exciting. Wow, that's so exciting. Was there anybody that you got where you thought, oh shit, I mean, Taylor made it intimated that when you got JJ, that was kind of like, fuck, like we have JJ. And it was apparently very late in the process, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't supposed to be. He was supposed to be our last regular shoot. JJ was supposed to be like our last interview. And he had to cancel like that day just for reasons. And so we rescheduled him. And we were ready to go. And again, it was a last minute thing he couldn't do. And the reason is so like unavoidable. Like, I guess I can tell you, it's not like super like personal life thing, the reason why he couldn't do it, but we had to reschedule that shoot because of jury duty.
Oh shit.
So So it was like, I was like, there's nothing we can do about that. Yeah. There's nothing we could do about that. And he felt so bad. And so we finally got a third. On the third try, we were like, he's here. This is when we're going to do it. And we realized, I realized during the shoot, that the time we were allotted was from noon to 1:15 in the day. Mm-hmm. And we knew he had a meeting before and we knew he had a meeting after. So we were like, they said, Bad Robot's like, come in whenever you feel like you have the place to yourself, your run of Bad Robot all day long, but JJ will be there 12 to 1:15.
Oh, wow.
And as he came in, it occurred to me that it was his lunch hour. He's so busy and he wanted to do this movie so bad that he sacrificed his lunch hour to do our movie, which like halfway through the interview, he's like, I'm hungry. Can I grab some peanuts? And we're like,
oh, bless.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was one of those things where I'm like, dude, like how cool is that? Like A, he said yes, which we didn't think was going to happen, but B, to be so like wanting to do this bad that he had to like reschedule and wanted it so bad that he's like, give those guys full reign of the place, let them set up as early as they want. And then just like he was at a meeting, did our interview, went to his next meeting.
That's incredible.
And he didn't have to do that.
Mm.
We kind of didn't expect him to be in the movie, but what's great about JJ Abrams is he really only worked on the pilot episode of Lost. And he wanted to let us know, like in my interview, he's like, I really just want to talk about the pilot and then Lost general as a concept, because he didn't want people to think that he did all this work that Damon and Carlton and the crew put in over the remaining six seasons. But what was great about the interview was, sure, we talked about the pilot, but also the reason why he wanted to do it, because he really fit more in the fan category. He loved the show. He watched the show. He would watch the show and text Damon like the next morning, like his thoughts, but like as a fan, like he wanted to get it out. Like he should have had a podcast. So it was one of those things where it's like, wow, this is great. This is why he wanted to hang out, because he was a fan of the show. So he mostly fit in the fan category, unless it was the pilot. So like that was just a ton of fun.
It's so funny the way things work. He's got a created by credit, but he is as much a fan of it as because he was only involved in the pilot. Right.
Right.
That's so funny.
It died on me.
That's okay.
So hopefully you don't hear an echo. I'll keep my volume down.
No worries. You sound good.
But yeah, so what was great too is this was like a month before the film was released, this JJ interview.
Wow.
Since we had the run of the place, we had contacted Brian Burke and said, Bad Robot's letting us use the space. Do you want to come over? JJ or Brian Burke came over and he was the last interview.
Perfect.
Which he did great too. He did great too, but that was also in Bad Robot because we had the space and Brian Burke tried to get Dominic Monaghan to come and they were this close to come to Bad Robot. Because again, they literally told us like, do whatever you want all day. It's yours.
That's so generous. That's amazing.
Yeah. Like Bad Robot and JJ, they're so awesome. I'm a massive Green Lantern fan. And
I remember.
They at the time they were making that the Batman Caped Crusader show, the animated series.
Yeah.
Great series. But DC really was sending them all kinds of just boxes of comics. And they're like, oh, do you want any comics? And I'm like, do you got any Green Lantern? And she's like, let me check. She flipped through and had a Green Lantern trade paperback that I hadn't read.
Stop it.
And gave it to me. And I'm just like, you guys are the freaking coolest. They have a spinner rack with a bunch of stuff that you can get. You can just take. And I grabbed, you can only take one thing, but we only went to Bad Robot twice after he canceled the one time, but I ended up getting two of the same thing. I get these cool Bad Robot patches.
Oh, come on. Look at that.
And then I got Bad Robot matchsticks, and they have like all kinds of stuff in there. It was like JJ and what he's got going in Bad Robot is like, just like, it's like utopia. They have a chef. I won't get too much in the weeds, but you can, like, they have a place where you can just go sit up a bar and like order food. They had drinks for us. It was their peanuts that JJ had.
Is it like Bad Robot branded?
They brought peanuts? Us a crafty basket full of like chips and pretzels and fruit and peanuts and trail mix and chocolates, and they brought it up to where we were shooting the interview just in case we needed anything. We did not expect JJ to be in it, and we definitely didn't expect him to want to be in it so bad and just to be the most generous host.
Right.
It was so cool.
That's so cool. Fucking cool. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I feel like if we got him sooner though, we could have probably got more.
Sure.
It would have been easier to get in touch with some of the others, but
with his interview being so late, was there a bit of a rush towards the end to try and re-edit and reshift things?
No. So what kind of happened is by the time we got to JJ, we had a 2-hour and 15-minute cut. So what we do is there's some people talking about the pilot episode in that cut.
Mm-hmm.
Where they weren't involved with the pilot. So going into JJ's interview and knowing that we only had like an hour, it was one of those things is like, this is the sound bites we need.
Right.
Let's ask him very specific questions. And then it was like, basically, as we were watching his interview go live, me and Taylor were like, okay, that's going to go here. That's going to go there. That's going to go there.
Okay, perfect.
But then when he started talking about fan stuff, it's like, okay, well, that stuff needs to kind of, we need to see where we could stick him in other spots. Same with Brian Burke. Brian Burke, we did not really expect to interview that day fully. So it's like, okay, where can we put him?
Right.
But the movie was basically done. There was some specific things where we were like, We knew ahead of time. So it was actually kind of easy. I think by the time we got the JJ interview done, it probably took maybe 3 days before he was like in where he needed to be in. It didn't take very long. So that's kind of nice when you have so much of the film done, you know, to be able to slot things in like that. And if you watch it, like, it doesn't feel like JJ was a last minute addition.
No, it does not.
Yeah, he feels real, like it feels really, like the
it
flow
flows
is really
very
good.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy because I was like, I think it was like a month and 3 days before the premiere in Los Angeles that we did JJ's interview. Yeah. And Berkey's. Yeah, it was cool. Yeah.
Remind me, because I forget. Was Carlton Cuse in it?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen it since I saw it at Phoenix, but okay.
So he was one of the people that we were kind of, he talked a lot about the pilot, but he didn't work on the pilot. So we knew Carlton's sound bites in that pilot, the section where we talk about the pilot episode.
Yes.
And we knew like JJ definitely is all over that pilot. And so we were able to sort of swap out Carlton there for the JJ stuff. It's crazy how it worked. It just worked. It just happened. Like the JJ was great. There really wasn't any time. There's a bit at the very, very end of the movie. It's a post-credit sequence.
Oh yes.
Where JJ asks if there's anyone we didn't get.
You didn't get Foxy?
Yeah. Yeah, and so it was one of those things where it's like, man, if we were able to lock him down that first thing, we probably could have got him to reach out to more people. But again, like, listen, the movie's great. the movie's great. Sure, it would have been great to have those other interviews, but at the same time, it's like, we're really happy with everybody. Things like, you know, Evangeline was instrumental in us getting like Elizabeth Mitchell,
which was
great. There were certain things where once stuff started rolling, you know, because the as my role as a producer was to reach out to everybody and kind of, you know, lock down schedules and try to woo them to be in this indie documentary where they're not getting any money. Like, mm-hmm. This isn't like, we didn't have like a crazy budget or anything. So like between Taylor and I, we would have different things. I remember the day Taylor called me and said JJ was in. I remember the day that I called Taylor and said, "Hey, are you on your speakerphone?" He's like, "Yeah." "Is Emily there?" "Yeah." "Okay. Evangeline Lilly's in." So like there's those times where you're just like, this is so amazing. And everybody was so amazing. So it was really, really a lot of fun. Like, deciding like when to go after certain people, because inevitably when you actually get in contact with someone, they'll ask who else is in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure there's a certain like kind of a, not a pecking order, but you're like,
you got
to
be,
you're not going to go to Evangeline Lilly day one and she's going to say who's in it and say you're the first.
Right.
So, but it was nice to like, by the time we got to Evangeline Lilly, was like, yeah, we have Josh Holloway. We haven't shot yet, but Daniel Day Kim and Ian Cusick are going to be available for a Hawaii shoot. And, you know, it was nice to be able to sort of like go along. Damon Lindelof was on fairly early. So that was a real help. Because when I send the emails out to the agents and stuff, I put a list of, here's the people we've already shot. And it's nice to have Jorge and Michael and, you know, like Bobby Moynihan was helpful in that. And then here are the people who've agreed. And it's nice to have a Damon and Carlton on there. And then once you like stuck JJ on there, because we had JJ earlier on in the shoot, once you have JJ in that list of has agreed to do it, then people are like, okay, well, this is like,
this is a
less documentary.
Right.
Like this is, yeah. Yeah. So like having Damon, Carlton and JJ were real helpful. Like having those guys on made it really easy to get like Jack Bender on, who directed every opening and finale of each season with the exception of the pilot and directed the most episodes of Lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the ones that you remember, he directed Walkabout. He directed The Constant. He directed Through the Looking Glass. So it's one of those things where it's like, it's nice to send out emails and say, "Hey, I'm working on this movie," and look at the list of all the people that you've already shot and the people who've agreed, and be like, me looking at that list growing and sending out emails, like just feeling more and more and more confident every time I sent one out that I was going to get responded to with a yes.
But I
like,
think
it's like, if they say no to this, then I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know what to say. Yeah. There's nothing I could do about it.
It's testament to you and Taylor and the entire team behind it also, because there wouldn't have been that endorsement. There wouldn't have been that continuing roll call of names if it wasn't for the space that you gave them in each interview. Yeah. They clearly felt so comfortable with you. And I have to say, as a fan, you can tell the movie's made by fans. And then when you watch them talk, they are as enthusiastic as anybody else. They so are. Funny. I mean, Evangeline Lilly was so enthusiastic about it. It was amazing.
What's so funny is we found that a lot of people, when they would agree to it, would have a hard out. They would have a hard out and be like, "I got to leave by 4:30 exactly." The first person to do that was Bobby Moynihan, because he was like our third interview or something. But he's like, "I have to be out by 4:30. I can't leave a second later." Okay, we'll accommodate you. We'll make sure. with at 4:25. I give a sign to Taylor. He's like, knows that he has 5 minutes left. We get Bobby wrapped at 4:29. We get his mic off. We have him sign the waiver, anything that we have that, or anything, just kind of like get everything situated and be like, okay, it was great to see you. Bobby left 20 minutes later because he kept wanting to talk about Lost. And Taylor created such an environment where it felt really relaxed. We made sure everything was set up by the time people showed up. The questions weren't going to be like, it wasn't about dirt. It wasn't about digging up dirt or anything like that. It was a real loose, fun environment to where we found that a lot of people with those hard outs were probably like, didn't know how this was going to go. And just wanted to make sure that they had a plan in place in case like things were bad, to be like, I'm out of here. I need to leave by 10:55 because I have a thing going on and I want to talk to Ralph on a podcast after 10:55 because I have places to be. It's more important, but you guys can keep talking. That's Luke. But it was one of those things where, it's like, it's so funny. Like, meeting everybody when they come into the room or where we're shooting, and then how they are when they left is like a different, completely different vibe.
Wow.
Like it went from, okay, where are we shooting this? Where do you want me to be? To, they just keep wanting to talk about Lost. They want to talk about the documentary. We shot Ian Cusick and Daniel Day-Kim on the same day back to back, and we left time. We scheduled it so there's overlap time so they can do a walk and talk on the beach. And like when cameras were off, like they would talk about Lost, and they were talking about how we, Taylor and I, were on text threads with cast members talking about us, essentially being like, how was it? How are they? Is it fine? Like talking behind our backs. And I'm listening to Daniel Day-Kim and Henry and Cusick, like from the show that I love, talking about me behind my back on their text chains. Like there was text chains going out. So people, like, we knew that they were talking about us while we were trying to reach out to their agents and stuff. And I'm like, and I told them, I said, hey, just put in a good word. But like after Ian's interview was done, we were on the North Shore by Police Beach where they shot the base camp the camp where they survivors camp. And we were going to do some drone shots, and Ian was just sitting there chatting with Taylor about like the movie and talking about Lost. And like, here I am, Ian Cusick, Taylor with a drone chatting. And the sun is literally setting behind the very beach that you see all those Lost sunsets. And I'm just like, this is crazy. That's like, this crazy, is a vibe. Man. It was really, really like, it's one of those things where you're just like, okay, This is cool. Like, and yeah, we are fans, and I think it comes through, but I do like that. It's like, we went to the places where they shot, and you know, we knew which fans to reach out to and stuff like that. So yeah, it was super rewarding. Like just all of the, every single person you see in the movie is super nice and awesome. Like, so if you ever wonder about any of these guys, like literally every single one of them. Like MC Gainey is a giant teddy bear and just the loveliest person. Andrew Devoff, who played Mikhail, super cool guy. Tanya Raymond, Evangeline, like maybe like 5 months after we shot Evangeline, we were at the concert that Michael was doing in Oahu.
Oh, so I was there as well. Yes.
Yeah. We were there for rehearsal. We were shooting rehearsal. We were shooting Evangeline's like, you guys need to interview Michael. And like, we already did, but I'm going to Hawaii anyway. So we took some cameras so that I can write off that trip for tax purposes, because we did work. We did get a Lost one. But the thing is, I'm on stage and we get word that Evangeline is entered the building, like we can just see her, and she comes in. She came over to me and gave me a big hug and says, how's everything going with the movie? Like, and this is like, I'm like, we hung out for like tops 2 hours, but she remembered me, you know, 5 months later. Ian didn't remember me, but he was super embarrassed. I said, Ian, we hung out for like 2 hours. I'm like, there's no reason you need to remember me. So that was kind of fun, but just the sweetest guy. Like after that con or after the, or before the concert, like had dinner with like Michael and Ian and Carlton and stuff. And they're just so, everybody was just so nice. Everybody, every single person.
Yeah. That's Carlton, incredible.
Damon, like everybody was just super nice. I feel like everybody really takes pride in Lost. And sorry if you're hearing the weed whacker. Everyone's such a fan about Lost that they just love it and wanted to talk about it. And it's something that they're super proud of.
And I'm glad that they are, because Lost comes with this controversy attached to it, especially with the finale, but also post-Lost, what was it, 2 years ago? When all this behind the scenes things got, you know, got leaked. I think it was Variety who reported it. Yeah, go on.
We were 26 interviews in when that book came out and the Vanity Fair article.
Oh shit, really?
I don't know about this. What happened?
There was all kinds of toxic stuff in the writer's room that had come out like while we're making the doc, and here we are, Taylor's trying to make like not necessarily a fluff piece, but a love letter to the show that we love, and now there's this huge mark on it, which is like toxic writer's room, racism, sexism, just allegations. And it's just like, now what? I'm trying to make this fun thing. Taylor wanted to kind of be like, I don't know if we should continue. I'm like, we have 26 interviews. Like, we have like good stuff. I said, just listen, the article came out 45 minutes ago. We've been talking for 45 minutes. It's a long weekend. Go enjoy your weekend. We'll chat about it on Monday. And by Monday, we cooled off. And it was one of those things which, you know, I feel like any other community would be like, cancel them. Fuck those guys. They're assholes. And this is what I told Carlton before his interview, which was, because he was asking, how are you handling all this stuff, like in the doc, how are you handling all the controversy? Is that really loud? Like, are you really catching that, weed whacker?
I can hear it, but I think it's cool. I think I can hear you above it. Yeah.
But I told Carlton, I said, hey, listen, man. I said, the show Lost, from the very get-go, is about a group of broken people on an island who we flash back to their previous mistakes. And the whole point of the movie or the show since day one was redemption. And I said, Lost fans understand that. Lost fans aren't toxic like Star Wars fans or Zack Snyder fans. I'm a Zack Snyder fan, but I just don't be an asshole to James Gunn. But that's not what Lost fans are. They're a community of thinkers. They're a community who understands the themes of Lost. And I said, so here's the thing is we're handling as if, you know, all this shit happened was a flashback. How are you able to bounce back? How are you able? Have you sort of redeemed yourself? Have you done anything different over the last however many years, much like the faults with Jack and Kate? Like I said, the Lost community, is kind of forgiving, and they kind of like understand, like, not everybody's perfect. They understand that. I did a live stream on my channel, I think 2 days or something after that book came out, or on the Monday. Like, it came out like on a Thursday or Friday, and I did a live stream on like the Monday with like 10 Lost fans, a lot who are in the movie. And just talked it out. And it's just titled Lost. We're lost for, like, what now? For, like, Lost fans. And it was through that almost therapy session where we have like Joe Garfane from Cancer Gets Lost and Jay and Jack from the Lost podcast with Jay and Jack and Karen Morrow, who is a cancer survivor who had cancer during Lost. And all these people from the movie talk about this and go over it. And it's like, yeah, I mean, this was 20 years ago. As long as these people who allegedly said and did this stuff have reconciled with the people that were hurt, like then Lost taught me that, you know, you could be changed, that you could be forgiven, that we don't have to just shun people forever. And so that's what I told Carlton was like, it's the show. Like the show taught us that it's okay to make mistakes and that you can grow from it. And so it was, the interview with him went great. I ran into Carlton on Wednesday and gave him a handshake and said, hey, and it was just one of those things where, you know, listen, dude, like we shouldn't have to like take accountability for something that happened 20 years ago if we've learned from that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's certain things like don't like go like murder someone and be like, I'll be forgiven, you know. At some point, right. I'll be a better person. But there are certain things where you're just like, hey, listen, we've all made stupid mistakes. No one's immune from that. I'm sure there's shit from 20 years ago that you did where you still think about, man, I should have handled that different. But that's growth. That's what it's about. And so for Lost, that's what it's
you
about.
As a person, you could be unrecognizable from the person you were 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'll tell you, like, I can tell you that everyone we met on this movie, every single one of them was super nice, super generous, treated us with like kindness. Our camera operator, Steve Hewer, who's great cinematographer and stuff, hadn't watched a lick of Lost. I think he watched the pilot and that's it. Was there the whole shoot and was like, he's like, this is the nicest shoot I've ever been on. It's crazy that everybody has been so kind to us. He's never seen that before. So I do me a favor. If you watch the documentary, take a note of everybody you see and know that they are a really kind person.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Okay. Well, first of all, Luke, shall we say,
yeah, I've got adios to drop off now, guys.
Oh, it's hard out.
No worries, sir. Thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
See ya.
See you later.
See you soon, sir. Take care. What I will say, Ralph, I'm so pleased that you speak to that because firstly, I will say I was impressed. I was surprised, but I was impressed that you and Taylor included all of this. You know, the backlash.
That's also something we wanted to show what the Lost fandom was like. And I think that's the best way to do it is to show like how forgiving a fandom could be. Like, I don't know how people are, like Buffy fans are dealing with like the heat around like Joss Whedon. Like, how do you deal with that? Mm. So it was nice to show a positive side of fandom, even in the face of like awful shit like happening.
Yeah, the funny thing is when I was watching it, genuinely I was thinking to myself, are they gonna deal with this? And then I thought, okay, if they do deal with it, how do they deal with it? And I personally think if you had just omitted it, then that would be glaringly obvious.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't. It's there and it's part of it. You know, it may be unfortunate, but it's part of this whole story. And I was so pleased that you did deal with it because you confronted it. It's there. It's happened. And it actually happened while you were making this thing, which is crazy.
It's still movie making. And so there has to be, you know, sort of a storyline. And since the jump with like Karen's story and Cancer Gets Lost and stuff, we knew that we wanted like a sort of second act conflict. And one of the things was always like how there's themes of cancer on the show. And it's like, you know, we also wanted to use this not to exploit it, but just show like, you know, it was something to discuss before going into the ending, this sort of second act conflict. And then this sort of this book by Mo Ryan presented itself, which was more of a second act conflict. Like, this is the second act conflict, where it's like, okay, this is really bad. How do we get out of this one? And what is nice is that the cancer storyline, it wasn't a conflict, but showed what makes everything a little bit better. So as bad as the environment was in the writer's room, and as, you know, as just like, this is awful stuff said in that book. Yeah. The allegations are pretty bleak to read. It was nice being able to be like, you know what? There is space in this community to forgive these guys, because that's what Lost is about. And what's great is that the show is still important to everybody. And following up the awful side of the writer's room stuff with the positive side of the cancer survivors and Cancer Gets Lost, it shows you that a TV show could be more than just a TV show. It could be more than just the creators behind it. It could mean so much more than any individual that went into creating it. That it can reach a global community. You know, I wouldn't know Karen or Joe or Caleb or any of these fans that are in the movie if it wasn't for this show. So it's like more than a show. And it's one of those things where it's like, yes, this is the story. And it sucks that we had to include it, but we really had to include it. And I think it's better for it, because...
Mm-hmm.
What a great ringing endorsement for how a fan community can be, than being able to like go through these lows and still come out the other side as a strong community. There's a group of people that live in the Southern California area that are giant Lost fans, and they'll just go around to any event that's like Lost related, like Sonya Walger, who played Penny on the show, recently released a book. And so this group of five people went to go to a book reading where she was doing a reading of her book, and Damon was there to just support the friend. So it's one of those things where it's like, all of that, the book stuff and the Vanity Fair article and excerpt didn't break up the fandom. It like made them stronger. So I would much rather have a movie that's about fans, where it's like, hey, you could be nice. You could be empathetic. Like, it's not a bad word, you know. It's one of my favorite aspects of the movie. It sucks that it happened, but it really shows like that you can persevere past like your own faults,
yeah,
and still have community there.
Yeah.
Thank
you for saying that, Ralph. I think you've said it. Sorry, I think you've said it better than I ever could. And you're so right when you link it to the show. Fundamentally, that's actually what Lost is about.
It was so funny standing there talking to Carlton about it too, because I'm like, because I went up to him and I said, okay, hey, listen, we have to talk about this stuff. We don't want to talk about it. You don't want to talk about it, but we have to. So I'm like, do you want to just get it out of the way and we can get to the fun stuff? And he's like, yeah, let's do it that way. And then he asked how we're handling it. And there was a moment where I'm sitting here as just a guy who was a fan of a TV show that this guy was involved with. And I'm like giving him a pep talk. Like, I'm just some dude explaining his show to him. Like, listen, it's the show. It sucks that this is happening to you. And it sucks for the people that, you know, were involved with any of this toxic shit. It's not fun. None of it's fun. But Lost isn't like the most fun show. Like, there's like messed up stuff and broken people. And I'm just like, it was just surreal. Just being alone in a kitchen with Carlton Cuse explaining to him like what we're doing. And Ralph, I'm insane, like, listen, man. Listen, I said, we're just fans. Like, we don't want to talk about it. No one wants to talk about it. But I could see his mind go more at ease after talking to him, which for me was like, wow, I feel like I knew I was producing. This is the first thing I've ever produced. I knew I was, well, I've like produced podcasts, but this is the first movie I've produced. And, I realized that it was like, oh, we're just a bunch of people, like just, but it was, but it felt so good knowing that like I'm making a difference. Carlton really didn't go public with the, after that article and stuff. Yeah. And, so the fact that I was able to put him at ease and he was willing to do this and he did a great job and it's a good interview and we did get to the fun stuff. And we talked about the spaceship a little bit with him. But, do you get the Blu-ray?
What?
Did you get the
Here's
Blu-ray?
Here's the thing. You know what? You know what? I'm so pissed at. I moved house. I moved address. My brother, who was in Hawaii with me at the Lost concert, mm-hmm. he got the Blu-ray. I didn't. I was like, oh, shit. It went to the old address. And I'm no longer speaking to the people who I used to live with at that address. So I feel like it's mm-hmm. lost to me forever. So what I may do is just ask to borrow my brother's Blu-ray.
Okay. Yeah. I could just say this now. It was secret for so long. There is a special feature. I don't know how much time you have because I've never talked about this. I have so many thoughts.
I've got time,
dude. So afraid to talk about it in public because it's one of those things that me and Taylor were like, holy shit, this is nuts. Hmm. But it's out there. I don't know if people are talking about it, but there is an interview, a DVD, a Blu-ray extra where Javier Grillo Marks Watch, who was part of the original writer's room, part of the group of creatives that came in to figure out what the show was going to be after the pilot was done being mm-hmm. written. They brought in like five writers along with Damon Lindelof to be like, what's this show about? Mm. Well,
he's literally
going to be on an
like
island.
An
how are we
going to
do stuff off the island? Like, it's yeah. And there's a lot of theories about the island, which Javi said it's never purgatory. It was never purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
But then gave us an option of what it was. And it's a thing that he liked. It's a thing that Taylor and I liked. And it's something that if you watch the show necessarily can't be disproven.
Okay.
Which is, and I'll try to say his words. And again, this is already out there in public. I've been avoiding it because I want to do my own thing on this subject, is that during the formation of Earth, before everything was like sort of creation,
mm-hmm.
an ancient alien spacecraft crash landed on Earth and was firing out a homing beacon and created life and basically I think the source of life as this ship transformed into life in an island. So
the ship,
ancient alien ship, the source of life. So have you've seen Prometheus, right?
Oh yes.
So the beginning, you have the alien, he drinks the goo, falls in the water, and that mm-hmm. creates life on Earth. So imagine that alien was just a spaceship that crash landed on Earth and life created around it. And that's the island. And you know, Prometheus was the first thing Damon Lindelof did after Lost. So it might be something that he didn't necessarily get to say, because we have his interview and Javi's interview both. There are bits where they say that ABC did not want a sci-fi show. So it could be something that was just never said. But if you know, you know.
That's fascinating. What? It might take me weeks to even to pass this out.
Taylor and I have been thinking about this for 2 years. I don't want to get into it. I need to talk to him first and see how we want to do this discussion. But I have theories stemmed from this clip of interview that you could find on the Blu-ray, if you were able to get one of those Blu-rays.
What?
I have theories that explain a ton of shit on Lost, including what the Flash sideways is.
Oh, stop it.
So I mean, I can do that as a teaser. Maybe we can get, I want to do something. I've told some people like my entire thoughts on this, but I'm afraid to do it in public because I'm sure there's a place where I can do it just right where, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well,
but I mean, once we're done here and that record button's off, I mean, I can lay it on you, but it's quite a thing.
I'm ready for it.
Caleb, who's in the documentary, who's like pretty much the heart of the movie. After the day after the premiere, we did the second screening, and I was leaving back to Anaheim from LA, and he was off to, off home, back east. And, I told him the whole thing and he was so happy. He was like, this is amazing. So I have thoughts, but it is out there that Javi believes that he liked the idea that they came up with, that it was a crash landed alien spaceship. It doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
Sure.
But I can tell you that Taylor definitely blurted out. So this is after cameras were done rolling, blurted out. So the island's a big crash landed spaceship, right? And Carlton's eyes went real big. And he took about 5 seconds before he said, if that's a theory you think, sure, go for it. But the look on his face said like, oh no.
Oh shit.
So it's, yeah. we'll have to, I mean, I feel bad for the listeners, but I'll tell you everything if you got time after we're done recording, but
we can talk off mic for sure.
I got it all for you, dude.
Wow. I got it all. Wow. That's amazing. Well, I mean, you know, it's, and I have to say to what you were saying earlier about how Lost is not just a TV show. Mm-hmm. All I've been thinking as well, the last 10 minutes is just, you know, despite whatever, you know, allegations or accusations were made and the behind the scenes, whatever that happened, I had to ask myself, does it change anything for me in terms of how the show impacted me? Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Right. I've said this before. I don't know if I've said it to you, but it changed my life. It really did. It's the best thing I've ever seen. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And maybe somehow that kind of makes it better that we are human and that there are flaws and all attached to this kind of thing. Yeah. You were saying something so wonderful about Lost fans, and it echoes something so lovely that Giacchino himself said at the concert. And I think he said it live, where he said, you know, there's something about Lost fans. Lost fans, I feel, he said, are truly decent people. They're good people. And they understand exactly what you're saying, the themes of the show. They understand community, love, family, relationships, a feeling of a greater importance. And I think I sat there and I felt spoken to, you know, with tears obviously running down my face in my Dharma jumpsuit. It was profound. It's so cool you were there. I, you know, if we'd have known each other beforehand, I would have said hello. As you can see here, I got my Lost tattoo in Waikiki.
Are you in the dock? Did you get?
So I don't think I am, but when I showed Taylor this, he said, you might be in it. I think it was someone else's. So clearly this isn't an original idea.
Yeah. We got like 70 of those. We got 70 video clips.
Oh, okay. The hieroglyphs. Yeah. I'm so happy with
it. Or no, this just is tattoos in general.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I definitely sent it across. It's so precious to me. But, you know, and I went on the Lost tour and I went on the beach and I went on all those things. It was eye-opening. Can I tell you my story of meeting Giacchino and Carlton Cuse?
Sure.
I'll just very briefly.
I was there too at the
signing
store thing.
Yeah. Fuck. Okay, so we didn't even know each other then, but okay, yes, it was the record store, and I had just landed. Giacchino and Carlton Cuse had been signing for maybe hours at this point. My brother and his girlfriend had gotten there hours before me. So I was like, hey, man, have fun meeting Giacchino. I'm super jealous. I'm not going to make it. I'm getting in too late, but don't worry about it. I'd landed. I'm still on the plane. And my brother texted me and said, we're still here and I think you can make it. I was like, no fucking way I can make it. I'm still on the plane. He said, no, there's no customs. You connected through the US. You can just exit the airport, jump into a cab. It's not that far.
It's not that far.
So I said, all right, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I'm going to make it. But okay, so I tried. So I'm in the cab and apparently they are shutting down. And I get there and my brother's been speaking to whoever's in charge with the clipboard and saying, listen, my brother is, you know, he's paid for it. He's on the way. I get out of the cab. All my shit's still in the cab, my luggage, everything. And my brother's girlfriend's like, you need to go right now. I said, yeah, okay, hang on. I haven't even paid yet. She went, don't worry about that. Go. So I run over to the front door. My brother's standing there with this guy with the clipboard. And he says, can my brother go in now? The guy's frustrated now. He goes, who's your brother? Where is he? And he says, he's right here. And he went, one second. Pops his head in. Comes out and goes, you're the last one. I was like, okay, this wasn't even in my plans, meeting Giacchino and Cuse. What? That wasn't in my plans. I didn't think I'd make it. So I walk in and I get my poster and I get my record, you know, from there. Now they're going to sign it. And I walked over and I was just like, oh my, okay, now Giacchino's looking at me and Cuse is looking at me. Shit. Okay, hold it together, dude. Say something cool. And I'm talking to him. Now, I've got to be honest. I think Giacchino was done. He was totally disinterested. He wasn't rude, but he was done. I could tell. He'd probably been there for, what, over 2 hours speaking to who knows who, nutsos. I don't know what Lost fans are like. And he was, I could tell he was just ready to go. So in that respect, it wasn't the best experience I had meeting my favorite film composer, but that's fine. Again, he wasn't rude. He right. signed what he needed to sign, and Carlton Cuse was like, boom, looking me in my eyes. He shook my hand. What's your name? Where have you come from? Thank you so much for coming. But, and I was like, oh my God, like the level of sincerity and engagement from Cuse was crazy. I was like, wow, okay. And when Giacchino signed, I took my shit ready to leave. Carlton Cuse practically grabbed it out of my hands like, dude, I haven't signed yet. And I felt so bad because the reason I'm there is for Giacchino, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I did it. I didn't even ask for a photo. Everyone else got a photo. I didn't ask because I thought, let them get on with it. But anyway,
you,
that was my experience.
Two things about that. That poster I designed originally.
Oh, shit.
It got some tweaks to it, which I was like, oh, I don't know. I was like, it looks too crumply to me. Uh-huh. The paper texture, I did not add the crumple. Mine was a little more subtle of a crumple. But then I was in line because I collect his records regardless. And I went to get it signed. And as he was signing it, I started like talking to him. And he's like, dude, we're going to dinner in like, in like an hour, like just get out of here. I'm like, oh yeah. Sitting there talking to him, like I'm like, of course. I went to dinner with him later that night with Carlton and Ian and Kevin and
amazing
some other folks. I got to hang out with Carlton a lot that night. Him and his wife are sweet. Ian is sweet. Once he realized who I was, like he's like, oh shit, I forgot you. It's like Ralph, of course. Mm-hmm. But yeah, dude, that's so funny that you were there. Yeah, I wouldn't have known.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, there's so many. It's so funny. There's pictures of me with other people that are in the movie at events that I was at, you know, 10, 15 years ago that we're in the same room. It's just weird.
That's crazy.
But that's Lost, small right? World. How people show up in other people's flashbacks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so telling what a global reach it has, because I tell you this, when the film premiered at Phoenix Cinema, it was sold out. Like, I couldn't even get tickets to it. Mm-hmm. You know, so regardless of what is said about it, you know, 15 years later or what have you, the global fan base, that the people who are truly still so in love with the thing, there's an audience there. You know, and I really feel that you and Taylor and everyone involved, Emma, everyone spoke to that audience so fucking well that we felt seen, we felt heard. So congratulations to you, sir. Thanks. Honestly, that's incredible.
Thanks. Yeah, go put that in your letterbox review.
Yeah, I'll do that.
It's wild. It was such a wild journey. But I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I finally said yes. It's such a weird, I don't know what else to say. Other than I am super happy I did it. It's opened some doors for me. I've met some great people. I'm glad people are enjoying it. I really am. There was nothing like this thing I've watched like countless times. I watched the 4-hour cut, you know, the 3-hour and 55 minute cut, the 3.5 hour cut, the 3-hour and 10 minute cut. I watched it so many times, but there was nothing like being at the LA premiere in a crowd full of people. And they're like laughing. They're like, "Ralph, it's really funny." And I'm like, "I guess so. Yeah, we had a good time." It's just, I had seen these same footage over and over and over again. And it was really nice. It was really, really nice that it connected with like the majority of the fans. There are some, you know, not so great reviews, but you know, what are you going to do? I think at the heart of it, it is seriously, it's made for fans by fans. Like, it's not, I mean, I don't know what to say. You know, we try to make it, you know, something for everybody, but you know, you're never going to get everybody.
You can't. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Can I just ask, has it changed your relationship with the show at all?
I'm a little tired of it, the show. You know what I mean? Like, sure. Like, I'm not like aching to go out and like watch it. I mean, I still love it. It's still amazing, but I don't find myself wanting to like watch it. There's fans out there that have it like on a constant rotation. For me, that's James
Bond. Yeah, I'm one of them.
You know, I'm sure if I did a documentary about James Bond, I'd be like, ugh. It's like why I don't have a James Bond podcast, you know? Cause I like having it as my thing where I just like, but I'll come on as a guest. I love doing that. But I love the show. I think honestly, the thing that changes my love for the community is like grown. Like I went out a couple weeks ago to dinner with a couple of guys who were like just fans of the show, fans of the movie, and they live nearby. And I'm like, we've been trying to get together just to go hang out. And I talked to them all about the spaceship. I told them the whole thing. And they're just like, oh my God. So it's really the community. There was something about the premiere where I really enjoyed seeing all the faces of people who we're interacting with. We'd created a Discord server for people who had tickets to the premiere and who were coming to LA so that we can like get to know each other. It's like, if you're staying at the hotel, do you want to get a, you know, share a ride or all the, it was just a like food recommendations, travel recommendations, just like a thing where we can get everybody together. And it was so nice at the premiere to finally like see the faces in person. Cause it felt like it was like the biggest Lost party on the 20th anniversary. A goal that we had set up like 3.5 years previous when Taylor called me, he was like, if we want this to release on the 20th,
Yeah.
On September 22nd for the 20th anniversary, we're going to have to start now. And I'm like, all right, man. And then it finally came and it was everything we wanted. Like everyone had such a good time. It was a big Lost party. We had people in Dharma jumpsuits, people in like Lost themed clothes. We had fish biscuits for everybody. there were delicious cookies. We had popcorn and it was everything. We had the what was salvaged from the polar bear sort of prop costume was there. Like we had like cast costumes on mannequins. It was awesome.
That sounds incredible. Oh wow, I wish I was there.
Yeah.
Oh well, again, yeah, I mean, congratulations to you all. Yeah, it is everything I wanted it to be as a Lost fan.
Yeah. Hopefully we can give you more too. We really have a lot of footage that we own. It's ours. Like we can Pop Motion Pictures can do anything they want, and with the exception of a few, but I mean,
right.
Even then, all we have to do is say, hey, is it cool if we post this? And usually those people are like, yeah, go for it. And there you have
it. I really hope so. Yeah. Cause I know I want to see more. I would have been happy with the 4-hour cut, to be honest with you.
I wonder if it still exists. I wonder if there's a link to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We had all kinds of links, like the sizzle. We had a short sizzle reel, long sizzle reel. We had like a sizzle reel that dealt with the book that we would send to journalists and stuff to be like, hey, do you want to be in our movie? And then we had the one that didn't have that stuff for people who we were like, probably weren't part of that. But it was like, we have like all these files of all these different versions of the movie and sizzle reels and trailers and clips and this is so much footage. There's so much footage, 80 interviews, each at least an hour and 15.
That's a lot.
Taylor and I have been asked, we want to release Javi's entire interview. Steve, who are our camera operator, was when we were done with that interview, he said, that was hands down the single greatest interview I've ever sat in on. And Steve's been in the business for years. Javier Grillo Mark's watch.
It is
amazing. I love in the movie, he's just like Walt is psychic. He's like, it's not purgatory. And then in the DVD extras or the Blu-ray extras, you can say it's a spaceship.
Incredible.
So yeah.
It's okay.
I want to get you guys more. We need to see about getting you guys some more stuff.
Please do. Yeah. I mean, I can speak for myself at least. I'm ready for it. Have you seen Duster, JJ's new show?
Not yet.
Same.
I've been so busy the last couple of weeks. I have been doing photo shoots. I produced a short film. Yeah, I've just been so busy that I haven't had a chance. Maybe I'll watch it tonight. What's going on today? Anything going on? I'll probably watch it. Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
I've heard good things. Yeah. So yeah. I was going to ask what's on the horizon for you, but yeah. Okay. So you've got a short film in the works. I know you've got your photography going. I'm
currently working on producing a new podcast anthology series, kind of like a horror thing. And I am currently in the middle of writing a feature film that's like a throwback to like midnight movie musicals, like Phantom of the Paradise, those kinds of thing. I don't like Rocky Horror, so I usually don't use that as an example. Forbidden Zone, like Richard Elfman's Forbidden Zone, like real low budget, like fun stuff. So I'm working on that. And then, there's stuff. We'll see.
Excellent. I'll keep you posted. Excellent. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I wish you the best of luck with that.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, then. Well, I guess we'll leave it there for now. Ralph, I want to thank you again for joining us and giving us your time today. We hope to speak to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. Anytime. And thank you for listening, everyone. Getting Lost is available to find on streaming platforms. It is well worth it. A great homage to the show by fans and for fans. Oh, and one last question. Have you watched The Leftovers yet?
No, I haven't watched Leftovers yet.
Okay. You watch that, I'll watch Davis. RoboCop.
Yeah. Hey, no dogs get shot in RoboCop. I'll tell you that.
Oh. That's good to know. That's good to know. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Head to the Phoenix Cinema to watch whatever films they're programming there. I think up next is Sinners by Ryan Coogler. Head to the Phoenix Cinema, and I will see you there. Bye-bye.